This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This podcast is sponsored by Wise, the app for doing things in other currencies. If you're sending or spending money abroad, you should use Wise. You'll have up to 40 currencies in the palm of your hand. Wise gives you the real exchange rate, which means you'll spend less on fees and more of your money gets where you need it to be. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. Insurance is perhaps the only product where we pay for it and hope we never have to actually use it. There's car, home and travel, to name just a few. And it's something Moneybox Live podcast listeners contact us about quite a lot. Because when the worst happens, like the floods earlier this month, it can be devastating.
I just don't know what's going to happen next week. Anxiety, I can't sleep.
We'll hear more from David very shortly. Property claim payouts hit a record £4.1 billion in the first three quarters of last year. That's according to industry figures. And premiums are rising.
It had gone from £253 per year up to £970 per year.
So today, when it comes to insurance, we've got you covered. We've got a lot to get through. Before we meet today's experts, though, let's meet David. He's one of dozens of residents forced to leave their flats in the beautiful old Meadow Mill building in Stockport, which was flooded on New Year's Day. His own flat is on the fourth floor, so no water damage, but he did lose his car. And he's been living in a hotel ever since. As a tenant, he's dealing with his letting agent and landlord's insurer.
So, yeah, we're just walking along the front of the building now up to where the river overspilled into the car park, probably about 6 foot high. Cars have floated from the top end of the development down to the bottom end of the development.
I could hear that generator going.
At the moment, I think the building's actually running from a generator until they change the power over.
Where's your window? Where was your car?
My window is on the fourth floor, about 8 windows in from the end of the building. And my car was directly below it in this parking space here.
I can see someone else's car there, completely wrecked, still full of water and mud.
Yeah, flood water's basically lifted and carried the car.
Where's the river?
So the river is at the rear of the property. So we're walking through industrial units towards where the river is. As we're looking now, the river's obviously at a lot lower level and it's obviously come straight over the banks.
When did you first realise something was actually going on?
I woke up in the night. There was no light switch on. And at the time, I didn't think anything of it. Got up for work in the morning, looked out the window to see a line of fire engines, police cars, mountain rescue. When I looked down, all I could see was the roofs of all the cars in the car park because they were completely submerged. And then basically the fire brigade came across in a boat, knocked on every single apartment and said, at the moment, you can't evacuate. If you go downstairs, you're likely to get carried away in the water because it's still flowing from the river. We stayed in the apartment till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was then safe for them to come and evacuate people.
So when you looked out at the flooded car park, could you see the roof of your own car?
Yes. And obviously at that point, my first concern was the insurance that I've got to cover that, which is third-party fire and theft. And that car's now been written off. End up getting £500 back after I spent £7,500 on buying it.
Even as we're just standing here, there's crowds of workmen in high vis kind of walking around trying to clean things up. There's obviously a huge amount of damage, but not to your flat.
No. Initially, when we moved out, we were told that you would need to pay the initial cost yourself to be claimed back at a later date from the insurance company. I've had to pay for food, taxis, hotels. Obviously, when we got evacuated from here, we left with none of our personal items. I've run out of clothes, anything that you need for your daily life. I'm buying a cup of coffee at a hotel, £3.50. Over the first 12 days, I got receipts for just under £1,200.
which I've had some of that reimbursed for hotel costs, but still waiting food costs to be refunded. As you can see, there's work still going on. It's not ready to move in yet. They're turning the electrics on officially tomorrow.
When it comes to your car, a lot of people listening will be thinking, well, third-party fire and theft, that's the wrong kind of insurance if you're living somewhere that is at risk of flooding. I'm not trying to kick you when you're down, but...
I mean, when we moved in there, I mean, there was never anything highlighted that there was a flood risk here. I mean, obviously, the buildings had substantial renovation, so, you know, you'd think they'd put in provisions if this was to happen.
Leaving your home at short notice with nothing, that is a huge event, isn't it? How are you coping personally with everything that's going on?
I'm not really coping. I'm worried at the moment for what's going to happen with work, with apartments, ongoing costs. It's left me in a position where I just don't know what's going to happen next week. Anxiety, I can't sleep. When it happened, you leave not thinking, I can't come back in. But we're on 15 days, I think we've been out.
We're standing in a major work zone. There's cleanup crews absolutely everywhere, lots of work going on. Presumably that's quite expensive work. Do you worry that your service charge, your other bills might go up because of this?
I think every resident's going to be concerned about the ongoing costs and where it'll all end, obviously. They're putting a lot of money back into it. Somebody at the end of the day is going to want to recuperate that money. If it happens again, where does it all end?
Well, thank you, David, for speaking with us. He has been in touch to let us know that he is finally home, but 3 weeks after being evacuated. Well, listening to that are today's experts. I'm joined by Mark Shepherd, Head of General Insurance Policy at the Association of British Insurers, which represents providers, and also by Sam Richardson, Deputy Editor of Which Money. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks both for being with us. Mark, flooding is just an incredibly stressful situation. And we heard from David there, even though his home wasn't damaged, he lost his car, he was paying out for hotels. He's relying on his landlord's insurance. Is that enough to protect tenants in a situation like this?
Well, it sounds like an awful situation for David. And indeed, it will be a stressful and anxious time for anyone who's been affected by flooding over the course of the winter. In terms of his landlord's insurance, so it sounds like David, he said his apartment was on the fourth floor. So actually, his apartment wasn't affected by the flooding itself, but his block was, and it was access to his block then which was the issue. So he's done the right thing in terms of going through his landlord, which will have landlord's insurance cover for the building. If you're a tenant, you're only required, or you will only be able to get insurance cover for your contents insurance. So that's the fixtures and fittings within your apartment or within your home.
Yeah, your stuff, you know, the policy that protects your belongings.
Exactly. So he's done the right thing in terms of going through his landlord. And then it sounds like as a result of that, there has been alternative accommodation arranged through the landlord's buildings insurance and some coverage for immediate needs like clothing and food.
But can a tenant get any kind of protection that would, you know, help cover them in hotels and that kind of thing in a flooding situation?
Well, actually, yeah, it's a little known fact, actually, that under contents insurance, there is some provision for alternative accommodation as well. So if people are in that unfortunate situation and actually they're not able to get hold of their landlord who's responsible for the building's insurance, and they do have contents insurance, it is worth looking at that and perhaps getting in touch with your contents insurer to see if there's provision for alternative accommodation should you not be getting anywhere through the building's insurer because you can't get in touch with your landlord, for example.
Sam, Mark's talking about little known facts about insurance. Do you think that there's an issue where people don't always have an understanding of what it is they're covered for?
Yeah, definitely. We surveyed over 3,000 insurance customers, and 2/3 of them thought there was a minimum standard of insurance that the regulator would enforce. And 31% of them said it would cover anything that they didn't cause themselves. And, you know, I don't want to like criticise people here for what is a very difficult financial product to buy. It should be easier to buy. It should be more obvious what you're getting. And people should be reminded that the contents insurance is so important to have, even if you are renting.
Well, we've reminded them now. Mark, there have been other serious flooding events this winter in other parts of the UK. Most homes at risk of flooding can still get insurance thanks to a scheme called Flood Re, which is funded by a levy on insurers and essentially means homes at risk of flooding can still buy affordable insurance. Not everyone is protected by Flood Re, are they?
No, that's right. So Flood Re is first and foremost for homeowners, and it has led to over 500,000 homes in flood risk areas to date as a result of the scheme being able to access flood insurance at a 50% reduction than previously was the case. So it is working for those homeowners. But where those who it's not eligible for are business owners, first and foremost, and then for homes built after the 1st of January 2009. And the reason for that was because there was significant planning legislation that came in the UK in 2008 that was meant to stop buildings being built in high flood risk areas. And so it's important for a scheme, the scheme that you've outlined, which is essentially meaning that everybody who's not at flood risk is paying a little bit more for their home insurance to subsidise the premiums of those who are at flood risk. It's essential that we don't use that scheme to incentivise development in the wrong areas going forward. So that's why that those homes are out of scope from that scheme.
OK. Well, if you want to hear a bit more about that and about the growing flood risk to homes, do listen to my documentary Uninsurable Planet, which is available now on BBC Sounds. OK, let's talk about car insurance, because we get a load of listeners contacting us about the rising cost of their premiums. I went to Stafford Services on the M6 and asked the drivers there what they were seeing.
I think mine's probably just under £600. I pay monthly and don't really pay much attention to how much comes out. But about £600.
Do you know if that's gone up, gone down, stay the same?
Yeah, I think that's gone up and it's worth shopping around.
Actually, you know, to be fair, I had a car accident and that's actually gone down. Don't know how that works, but yeah, my car insurance is cheaper this year. Usually I used to go for the top brands, but now it's just whatever's easier, like the cheapest one, just go for it because it tends to do the job.
So I have an NHS fleet car, so I don't actually pay for car insurance.
So you're just enjoying life.
Yeah.
Bars has gone up about £400 from, I think it was about £391, so £400 on top of that.
So, I mean, that's almost doubled.
It's absolutely ridiculous. What are we paying for? I don't know. These insurance companies are starting to take the mickey a bit now. Really, really are.
Mark, a bit of a mixed picture there, but that last motorist, pretty damning about your industry. So explain this to us. Between May 2021 and June 2024, the price of general consumer goods and services rose 21%. Alongside that, the quoted price of car insurance rose 82%. Why?
Well, first of all, I'm glad to hear it wasn't all bad news in the interviews that you did with people there. But you're right. Average motor insurance premiums had been going up. Pleased to say, in the last two quarters, according to our data, they have been falling. But like many sectors over the last couple of years, insurers have faced significantly increased costs outside of their control. So it's been especially acute in the motor sector in recent years because of things like labour shortages, a lack of availability of parts to fix cars, and repair costs that have increased more than inflation.
Okay.
So that's definitely impacted clearly the claims costs that insurers have been facing, and that has fed through to premiums.
But the Department for Transport told us it recognises the high costs and had set up a cross-government task force to look at how government policy might reduce premiums. So there is clearly an issue here.
I absolutely accept, and we're particularly aware of the financial challenges that many people are facing, and indeed how vital having access to a car and affordable insurance is for people, particularly in areas like rural areas where there may not be decent public transport. But there are things that can be done. So things like improving road safety and infrastructure will help. Even introducing measures for drivers to gradually increase their experience if they're new drivers on different road conditions after they pass their test. And there's increasing evidence, which we're discussing with the government, around the introduction of 20 mile an hour speed limits in some parts of the country that have had a significant effect in reducing accidents. So there is plenty to be done. Motor insurance premiums are starting to tick down now, which is hopefully
good news.
Will be
a big relief for our listeners.
But more can be done. I absolutely agree, and we're working with government to do that.
Sam, we also heard someone there saying he just got the cheapest cover. Is that wise?
Well, it could not pay, yeah, for him further down the line. The problem there is it may lack cover for areas such as glass damage. If your windows are smashed, that's omitted from a lot of the cheapest kind of essentials branded policies. But I can completely understand why people are being driven to those cheaper, sometimes insufficient options. I mean, what hasn't been mentioned yet is if you need to spread the cost of car insurance, and for many drivers where you've got, you know, a premium of several thousand pounds, you're going to have to. That itself can add cost to it because many insurers charge interest rates equivalent to credit cards, so potentially
because
you know,
they're 30%. Extending credit.
Yes, but we would say a crucial difference is if I buy a sofa on credit and I ride off into the sunset tomorrow with my sofa. Well, perhaps this example doesn't make too much sense.
No, I am picturing you now driving the sofa. But carry on.
You know, I've got it and I haven't made most of my payments. If I miss next month's insurance premium payment, the insurer can just cancel the insurance. I haven't made off with anything. So we'd argue it is quite different to normal credit. We'd also question why it needs to be quite that expensive, you know, okay. 30%.
Well, let's talk about how expensive it is. Because, Mark, you mentioned younger drivers. Anyone who thinks their premium is high should try being a teenager. While I was at Stafford, I spoke to 18-year-old Connor and I asked him about the cost of insuring his first car.
Last year, I had to spend about £5,000 for a year's worth of insurance.
Sorry, £5,000?
Yeah. This year, I got my renewal. They offered me £6,000. But then I went onto the same provider's website. I tried to get a quote. Out of nowhere, it come down to £3,000. But for the same policy, the renewal quote was £6,000. So.
Can you afford to drive at that kind of policy cost?
It's a struggle. Just about get by with it. But, you know, can't keep trying to push up, can you? Yeah.
Mark, £6,000 is staggering. My first car only cost £500. A lot of us can understand why a younger, less experienced driver would end up paying more, but that is still a huge number.
It is, and clearly that's very challenging for people to be able to afford. But a couple of things I would point out, Felicity. So 17 to 25-year-old drivers are four or five times more likely than the average driver to be involved in an accident. And it's important to remember that the majority of what our premiums pay for is the injuries caused to other drivers, passengers or pedestrians in road traffic accidents. And serious collisions can unfortunately mean serious and life-changing injuries for people. And the amount of compensation for serious injuries to cover things like lifetime care costs or loss of income because someone's unable to work again can reach into the tens of millions of pounds for a single claim. So to compare it, as you've done, to, you know, the cost of a vehicle, it's actually not really a fair comparison to what you're actually covering against, which is that risk of serious injury to someone else.
Okay, thank you. Now, what about when you have your home insurance and it's renewal time? Andrew from the Isle of Lewis got in touch with us about that.
I received a letter from them. When I opened it, it said that it had gone from £253 per year up to £970 per year. So I went back to ringing around the insurance companies, got various quotes from £826 down to £256.20. So I took the one at £256.20 and then telephoned the companies to let them know that I wasn't going to renew, and spoke to a gentleman who then reduced the price from £970 per year to £486 a year. I declined to proceed because I thought if that was the way they did business, I really didn't want to do business with them. I don't understand why they hook you with this low price, and I think they do deliberately do that, and then put the price right up in the hope you won't notice. I have had home insurance now for some 50 years, and I've never claimed on it. Oh, and thank you to Moneybox for everything over the years and stop me making some stupid mistakes.
Well, Andrew, thank you for that. Very good to hear. Mark, to Andrew's point, though, we hear about this all the time. And there were rules brought in by the Financial Conduct Authority, weren't there? It shouldn't be happening.
Well, there were rules brought in to ensure that a renewing customer was not paid or not charged more, quoted more than an equivalent new business customer to that insurer. So what we shouldn't be seeing is differences in those prices. That doesn't mean differences because people's risk has changed, or doesn't mean differences because their level of cover might have changed at renewal, or they might have changed something like their excess, etc. Often what we find is when people have rung up their insurer to challenge a quote, some insurers will just not change that price at all, but some may well have a conversation with that customer then about changing the level of the cover, and that can be what leads to sometimes a change in the premium that's quoted.
Okay. Well, the FCA told us we've intervened directly with firms where we found poor customer service and claims handling. Sam, what can people do to make sure they're not just automatically paying way more than they should be?
Well, I was so impressed by Andrew's story. I mean, firstly, the ringing around, though I'd certainly encourage people to use comparison sites as well, because insurers can price differently via comparison site as they do on their own website, as they do by phone. Mm. And then the way he took those prices to his current insurer. And I agree with him that, you know, it is outrageous that, say, people who didn't haggle in that situation would end up paying almost twice the amount. But, you know, we do live in the world as it is. I would certainly encourage people to haggle for an awkward 15-minute phone call. It could be worth hundreds of pounds. Okay. Also, with home insurance, I'd look at what cover you're actually paying for. Are you paying for extras, perhaps legal expenses insurance that you don't need anymore? Try cutting that.
Might need it, though, when you come to claim.
You might, but with a lot of these extras, they earn insurers a lot of money because actually people don't claim on them that often. The claims aren't too expensive. Obviously, you know, this is a decision you need to kind of think about quite carefully. The same with if you raise your excess, which is the amount of money you have to pay if you claim, that can reduce your premium. Mm. But it's obviously crucial you can afford to claim, that you can afford to make those repairs.
Lots of important things to think about before you cut your cover. Okay, we are getting loads of emails, loads of voice notes with loads of questions. Here's Chris with a question about solar panels.
Hello, Moneybox. I'm about to embark on having solar panels and battery storage. Do I need to inform my insurance company of the new additions once installed? Thanks. Chris from Wisbeach, Cambridgeshire.
Thank you, Chris. Mark, it's actually quite important to tell your home insurer before you have work done, isn't it?
It is. So certainly in the case of solar insurance panels, often put on the roofs of people's houses, from the insurer's point of view, that can clearly change the risk that they're insuring. So before you do that, you should get in touch with your insurer, one, to make sure that they will still be willing to cover that property, and two, whether there's any change in that risk profile. Sometimes solar panels, unfortunately, can lead to an additional fire risk to the property, so insurers may need to take that into account.
Okay, we've had a message on Blue Sky from William, who says his claim was rejected. He says, old house had a ceiling fall in, claim denied, now I can't get insurance from anywhere. How common is it that claims are rejected?
That's probably one for me, but we don't see claims. The vast majority of claims are actually accepted. So in motor insurance, over 98% of claims are accepted, and in home insurance, it's generally around between 70 and 75% of claims.
But what can you do if yours is rejected? Have you got anywhere you can appeal to?
Well, yes, you can certainly go through your insurer's complaints process. That would be my advice in the first instance. And if that doesn't resolve the matter to your satisfaction, then you would look to potentially get in touch with the Financial Ombudsman Service. They will require you to go through the insurer's complaints process first so that the insurer has the opportunity to put what might be a mistake right. But if you're still not satisfied, then the Financial Ombudsman Service is an independent adjudicator there that will look at the situation of the claim and whether the insurer has been right in declining it.
Thanks a lot. Okay, let's hear from Mandy next.
I was diagnosed with breast cancer last December, not the one, this one, but the one just gone. And it's all been treated now. I'm still on hormone treatment just to kind of stop it coming back. But I was just wondering how that affects my travel insurance, because I'm hoping to go away this summer. And it's kind of looking forward to kind of just, yeah, doing something just really just now it's all done, because it was awful last year. So just to do something nice. But I've not thought about this question really. So just is there anything I need to consider? Or any particular agency need to go to or anything like that, really.
Mandy, thank you so much for that. Hope the rest of your recovery goes really well and that you do get a lovely break. Mark, do you need a specialist policy then if you've had an illness in the past or you've since recovered?
Well, I really hope as well that Mandy can get away after clearly what's been a tough time. So some travel insurers, particularly those that are available on price comparison websites, can generally be set up to cover what they'd consider to be more general or standard risks. Others look to specialise. So there are options if you're struggling to find cover because of a pre-existing medical condition, for example, through the normal routes. You can look to use a specialist broker. And there are also two directories that list details of firms that specialise in cover for people with pre-existing medical conditions, including those recovering from cancer. One is the Money Helper Director, provided by the Money and Pensions Advice Service. Mm. And the other is run by the British Insurers Brokers Association, and there's information online on both of those.
We've also had an email from Robert who says their partner's newly diagnosed with Parkinson's, needs to travel abroad beyond Europe, and that they're beginning to unravel the minefield for people with chronic conditions. Your advice there would be relevant to Robert as well. Go and find a specialist who will be able to cover you with an existing condition.
Absolutely. But it's also important to remember that it can depend on where you go. So we know, for example, the cost of medical treatment in America, for example, it can be skyrocketing. So have a think about, do you actually need to go to America? Because it might be if you've got a significant pre-existing medical condition that really increases your risk of having high-cost medical treatment, that actually it would make more sense to go to a country where those medical costs can be recovered or there's a reciprocal health agreement with the UK.
A reciprocal health agreement, Sam, like a GHIC card. We have the Global Health Insurance Card. What does it do, and does it take the place of travel insurance for some people?
So it doesn't take the place of travel insurance. I'll explain why. It's entitling you to state healthcare and at the same level as a citizen of that country would receive, but only mainly with European countries at the moment. So that wouldn't include things like, say, if you got ill on a cruise, because, you know, the state's not going to airlift you off a cruise for free. It's not going to include stuff like getting back to the UK if you need a lot of assistance. Certainly, travel insurers will take, you know, GHICs and EHICs that preceded them into account when pricing you. So it's really important you have one, but it just won't take the place of travel insurance. I'd also say with travel insurance, don't leave it to last minute. Don't put it on the packing list. Just buy it when you buy your when you buy your holiday. It doesn't need to start until you go on holiday. But if you buy it early, you'll be covered for stuff like having to cancel because of events outside your control.
Oh, that's always very good advice, isn't it? Okay, well, is there a final bit of advice you'd like to share, both of you, that's relevant to maybe all insurance products, whether it's about saving money or getting the right protection? Sam?
Yeah, mine is loyalty doesn't pay. While some insurers are doing innovative things here, in general, you should always shop around rather than just automatically renewing. Your insurer won't be offended and it could save you hundreds of pounds.
And Mark, we probably don't care that much about offending insurers, but what's your tip?
Well, I certainly agree with Sam's tip on shopping around, but also, you know, while I appreciate people have very busy lives, do take time to understand your cover when you take it out. Policy documents will have a summary setting out what you're covered for and what you're not covered for. So if you aren't sure as well, then get in touch with your insurer to discuss that.
Thank you. Well, time always comes at a premium here at the Moneybox Live podcast. That is all we've got time for today. Thank you to everybody who got in touch or took part. And thank you to our panel. We've been hearing from Mark Shepherd from the Association of British Insurers and Sam Richardson, the deputy editor of Which Money? You can listen to the Moneybox podcast with Paul Lewis on Saturday. He'll be talking about the growing number of people paying tax on their state pension. If you want to contact us about that, or if there's another story you would like us to look at, please do get in touch. You can email moneybox@bbc.co.uk. You can also send a voice note or comment to us on WhatsApp. The number is 03306 783 183. In this podcast, the producer was Sarah Rogers, production coordinator Ema Devlin, studio manager Becky Marcus. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
I'm Matthew Side, and Sideways, my podcast from BBC Radio 4, brings you stories of seeing the world differently.
From that moment on, I feel like my life and the way that I view life itself just shifted, literally.
Stories about the ideas that shape our lives.
If the missile had come down and killed us all, it wouldn't have mattered. It was just me in a moment of bliss in the middle of a war zone.
Stories about everything from the ethics of using AI to simulate conversations with the dead to viewing decay as a vehicle for rebirth. Listen to Sideways, first on BBC Sounds.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
This podcast is sponsored by Wise, the app for doing things in other currencies. If you're sending or spending money abroad, you should use Wise. You'll have up to 40 currencies in the palm of your hand. Wise gives you the real exchange rate, which means you'll spend less on fees and more of your money gets where you need it to be. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.